The following is a repeat broadcast of Health Matters, and no phone calls will be taken tonight.
All right, good evening, and welcome to Health Matters. I'm Dr. Patrick Glavo, and I'll be your host this evening for our discussion on voice and voice disorders. Now, this is my first time running the board, so if we have loud music appear at any given time, I am going to ask for your forgiveness. Now, joining me tonight in the studio is Dr. Paul Weinberger of the Center for Voice, Airway, and Swallowing at LSU Health in Shreveport, actually the founder of the Center for Voice, Airway, and Swallowing. So welcome, Dr. Weinberger.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, we are having a discussion on voice tonight, and we know that everyone out there has a voice, and we would love to hear it. So, Dr. Weinberger, thanks for being here this evening.
Glad to be here.
All right. Well, let's just start off with something a little bit more simple. So you're a laryngologist, and that sounds intimidating. So explain to me a little bit. What is a laryngologist?
Well, it's easier to say than otolaryngology. I'm still trying to teach my parents how to say that.
Yeah. I imagine that's difficult. Do they just tell their friends, oh, he's just a doctor?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So what do you do exactly?
So as a laryngologist, I specialize in treating disorders of the voice and swallowing in the airway. And so it's a subspecialty of ENT, ear, nose, and throat, or otolaryngology. It's a fellowship after your residency training, and so we focus just on the throat.
Wow. So that means, so you did more schooling after your school to focus on just the voice?
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. So tell us a little bit about the Center for Voice, Airway, and Swallowing. So when was that established?
We established it when I was recruited here about a year ago. And it's exciting because there's not a whole lot of voice centers around. These are generally places where you have a concentration of specialists in the areas of dysphagia or swallowing rehabilitation and in airway reconstruction and in treating professional voice disorders.
Okay, so where exactly is the closest voice center from here? Because, I mean, you said, you know, these are typically in large centers. If they don't come here, where is the closest one, I guess?
So you have one in Baton Rouge, and then the closest one after that would be in Houston, Texas, or in Jackson, Mississippi.
Wow. So it's quite a hike.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I know we're glad to have you then. Tell us a little bit then. So you work with the voice. You said voice orders, voice disorders, swallowing disorders. Tell us exactly how are vocal cords, like how do they work?
Your vocal cords are very interesting. They're actually much like a oboe or a clarinet or other reed instruments in an orchestra. You bring your vocal cords together and then blow air past them, and then the air movement causes them to vibrate, just like the reed on an oboe. And then you shape that buzzing sound into what comes out as speech. There's actually a speech therapist who lectures at Vanderbilt University that can take a bellows and a kazoo and then with his hands shape that sound into recognizable vowels and consonants. It's crazy to watch.
So that buzzing sound, is that, that's a very romantic way of putting it. So then you're also suggesting that perhaps there's more to your voice than just your voice box. There's a contribution from your mouth. How does, is your tongue involved?
Yes, the entire upper aerodigestive tract, actually, your nose, even your sinuses, the back of the throat, it all contributes.
Wow. Well, we've actually already got a caller in here.
Right.
So we've got Vicky from Nacogdoches. So, Vicky, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is regarding dysphagia or dysphagia. I am familiar with a friend who has what I believe to be late radiation-associated dysphagia. And I wonder if you're aware of any programs in the area that are treating this particular disorder.
That's a great question. And I'm sorry to hear that about your friend, but glad to hear that they have survived their cancer. So at least that's a little bit of good news there. But radiation can commonly cause trouble swallowing or dysphagia. And we treat that at the Center for Voice, Airway, and Swallowing. The first step is, of course, trying to evaluate how well the esophagus, which is the swallowing tube, connects your throat down to your stomach. How well is that working? Is it squeezing properly? Sometimes it can just be that there's a stricture or a scar band that's physically blocking it, almost like a blocked drain in your sink. And that can be opened up pretty easily. Other times the radiation causes nerve damage that makes the esophagus not squeeze properly. That can be a lot harder to treat. But it's always worth looking at to see what options are out there.
Okay, great. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Vicki, thanks for calling in. So I guess that brings up a good question. Do you deal mostly with cancer patients? I mean, you're a professional voice doctor. So does that mean you deal mostly with singers and people who have professional voices? Or do you deal mostly with people who have radiation, a little mixture of both? What kind of is your wheelhouse?
I'm glad you asked that. So professional voice actually encompasses so much more than most people think. Most people are thinking like Adele.
Right. You think, you know, the soprano in the choir.
Exactly. But it's actually anybody who uses their voice professionally. In other words, if your voice is required for you to make a living, you are a professional voice user. So lawyers, teachers, accountants, anybody that interacts and if their voice didn't work, they couldn't work either. That's a professional voice user. And so that is a large proportion of our the patients that we see. But we also see a lot of patients with head and neck cancer and trouble swallowing. And then a lot of patients that have had car accidents or other major illnesses and had damage to their airways and are now dependent on their tracheostomy tube to breathe. One of the big things we do is trying to reconstruct the airway and get that trach tube out.
Okay, wow. So there's a bigger range than I think most people probably realize, because I think when you think of a voice doctor, you think, oh, I don't qualify for that. I don't need a voice doctor. I'm not a singer. I'm not Adele, like you said. But she smokes, by the way. Did you know that?
Yes, and you can hear it in her voice, actually.
So is that what makes it sound so good?
I'm not going to comment on that because I don't want to lead anybody else to smoke.
We're not going to advocate for smoking
exactly.
To sound like Adele here on Health Matters, at least not today. So we talked about vocal cords, so that's part of your voice box, which is part of all of this mysterious thing hanging out down in your throat. I guess... tell us a little bit about that. So when we talked about cancer, what is your role in cancer of the voice box? Like, what do you see? Do you treat it? Do you provide surgery for it? How do you handle it?
So a lot of times I'm just making a diagnosis. And then, head and neck cancer is one of those fairly scary diseases, to be honest. There are some cancers that aren't quite so bad. Head and neck cancer is one of those that the outcomes can be very poor. And so we're very careful to make certain that when a head and neck cancer is diagnosed, that an entire team of experts decide what the best treatment is. And so there's what's called a head and neck tumor board, which has radiation oncologists and chemotherapy doctors and otolaryngologists and speech therapists, and everybody gets together and kind of argues and reviews the latest literature and bangs their shoe on a table and decides what's best for that individual patient. And so at the really good centers, that's what's done with head and neck cancer patients. And I'm pleased to say that's what happens at LSU Health. And so a lot of times I'll be making the diagnosis and then presenting that patient to the tumor board and saying, decide what is the best step for this next patient. Sometimes the best treatment, if it's an early cancer involving the larynx, is to remove it with a laser. And so I do that. Other times it's radiation therapy or chemotherapy or a combination of different treatments.
So you do laser therapy?
Yes, lasers. You have to do your fingers in quotations like Dr. Evil.
Lasers.
Yes.
All I asked for was sharks with laser beams on their heads. I never get what I ask for. Actually, we have another caller here. We've got Michael from Bossier. So, Michael, hey, you're on the air.
That's Bossier City. I know it's tough to say. I'm doing great. Listen, I have had trouble all my life, really, with a raspy voice. And I have to really push a lot of air across it to get any sound. It doesn't command any authority. I've had issues with that. And I have been trying to research and see if maybe there's a thyroid issue or just what. But I'm 72. I would like to have a little more command with my voice. Like I said, it always seems raspy. And wondered if there were some approaches that I maybe ought to consider or something I should look at.
Excellent, excellent question. And so with your age, not being able to examine you yet, but I can tell you that there's a really good chance that you have something called presbylaryngitis, which is, doctors love to make these fancy, hard to pronounce words for everything. It kind of irritates me, actually. But it's just fancy doctor speak for vocal cords that are getting older. And so as you age, all the muscles in your body get kind of flabby and a little bit weaker. They atrophy. And the same thing happens in your voice box. And when that happens, your vocal cords aren't as plump as they used to be. So it's harder for the body to bring them together so that they're touching each other so that they can vibrate. And the really good news for that is that the treatment is quite simple, and it's just re-plumping up the vocal cords. And that can be done in the office with an injection under just local anesthesia, or it can be done in the operating room.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That's encouraging.
Yeah. So there's probably a really good treatment for that. And I would say, talk to your primary care doctor about getting a referral into the Voice Center. And I would be happy to see you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, Michael, thank you so much for your call.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
We've already touched on a few different issues. I think it's great that callers are calling in with different areas that are troublesome to them or that they have questions with in this area, because it seems like a small area, and proportionally to the size of your body, it is a very small area, but it's so important, and it's involved in your swallowing and your eating and your just daily communication with friends and family. And I feel like it's a really big issue. An interesting thing that you pointed out, I think, is that the larynx is a muscle. So your vocal cords are a muscle, as you said, that they can loosen over time and can become weaker with age or even almost saggy. So is there anything that you could tell us about maybe voice hygiene, voice exercises? Is there anything that can be done to prevent that to some degree, or maybe assist with the therapy of that? I mean, can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, there are so many parallels. So we have a voice therapy trained speech language pathologist, Melanie Brown, and she specializes in vocal therapy. And a lot of what she does bears so much resemblance to a physical therapist working to rehabilitate athletes after an injury. Just the muscle groups that she's working on are in the larynx. And so just like with the rest of the body, in terms of long-term care of the voice, we definitely see that people who use their voice a lot, their vocal cords tend to stay stronger and their voice stays stronger throughout their life. So for instance, professional singers, when you listen to them, even when they are in their 60s and 70s, they still can belt it out. It's amazing. You know, they still have it. And most of that is because they've continued to sing and use and exercise those muscles as they get older. In the short term, what can you do to protect your voice? So if you know you've got a speaking engagement coming up, or you sing in the choir and you've got a big role coming up, remembering that every use of your voice is a use of your voice. So talking is using your voice almost as much as singing. The worst thing you can do for your voice is to whisper. That actually puts so much strain on it.
Now, that's very counterintuitive. Why is that?
You're just torquing your larynx into a very odd configuration and making it do something that it really wasn't designed to do. And so if you've got a big event coming up, or a time that you know you've got to have your voice and you want it to be at its best, then you shouldn't be yelling or screaming or spending hours and hours and hours talking in the day before or the day of, and kind of take it a little easy.
Okay. So a few tips. First of all, use it or lose it.
Yep.
And then don't whisper.
Yes.
So I'm going to tell my mom that, because I've gotten in trouble for that since grade school. Patrick, stop talking. So I'm going to remind her, I'm just trying to preserve my voice for the future. Dr. Weinberger told me I should. Now, we've got another caller here. We've got a lot of callers for you, Dr. Weinberger. So this is Hill. Hill, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. My question is goes to singing in falsetto. I was in a singing group when I was in college, and somewhere along the way, I heard that singing in falsetto does damage to your voice or your vocal cords or something like that. What is falsetto? What does it do? And can it do any damage?
Oh, these are fun questions. Awesome. So, no, falsetto is not going to damage your voice. It is just using your head voice. And so to get very technical, so if you picture bringing your vocal cords together and they're going to vibrate like a reed in a clarinet, when that's the normal way of voicing, and the entire vocal cord vibrates. If you were to tense that vocal cord up really tight and only allow the very edge of it to vibrate, that's what falsetto is. And so if you look at a larynx under stroboscopy or high-speed video when a person is singing or speaking in falsetto, it's exactly what's happening. and it's not intrinsically damaging to the larynx at all. You're just tightening it down and just vibrating that tip.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, can we hear you singing falsetto?
Oh, yeah, real quick.
Please?
Oh, I'm not sure I can do that.
Hill, thank awesome. You so much thank for you. Your call. All right. Dr. Weinberger, now you are the doctor of voices, so I've got a little game here that I've devised for you.
Okay.
So what I have here are some clips of people's voices. Now, these are theoretically relatively recognizable voices, and I want you to know if you can diagnose the person with the voice. You don't actually have
to. Oh, this is going
to
be embarrassing.
You don't have to tell me what's wrong with them. Some of them probably don't have anything wrong with them, so we'll start off with something easier, maybe that's been in the media a little more recently, so I feel like you'll probably get this one.
You can never be sure of anything, can you? But I developed a very good relationship. I don't think they want to see a destabilized North Korea. I don't think they want to see it.
Now,
is that Kermit the Frog?
No, that is not Kermit the Frog, but I feel like he had some hints in there for you.
Donald Trump.
Donald
yes.
Trump.
Okay,
well,
I got this.
You truly are the master of voices. The falsetto question was very interesting to me because you do always, you think about that. I think it's stereotyping that you think, oh, people who speak with a high voice all the time are really going to damage their voice.
Actually, so this is a fascinating thing, is that one thing that is very damaging is if you're a guy and you think that you're supposed to speak in a lower tone of voice. We actually have a ENT resident in our department that does this. And so he uses what's called vocal fry, and it's not really using your vocal cords. You're just kind of vibrating the back of your throat to talk. It's very, very bad for your voice. And I'll bet you anything, if we were to do a voice examination on that resident, he probably has a voice that should be about up here, but he doesn't like the sound of that.
No. Well.
And maybe other people wouldn't like the sound of that either.
I try to talk a little lower because I'm tired of being mistaken for a woman on the phone. So sometimes I won't do that for the rest of the show. That's probably not good. So glottic fry, you called it?
Glottal fry, yes.
Yeah, so that's not actually using your voice box to talk? That's
using your false chords and just letting your vocal cords and false chords just flop in the breeze.
Is that like the equivalent of like belching the alphabet?
Oh, no, that's special.
Oh, now, Dr. Weinberger, I hear you might have a special skill. Are you able to belch the alphabet?
I did pick up this skill. Of course, you know, everyone in grade school develops this as kind of a party trick to some extent or another.
Sure.
But as a laryngologist.
Parting with your armpit.
Yes,
belching
that's
the alphabet.
Also up there. I can't do that one. But in laryngectomy patients, so if you have really bad cancer in your larynx and it has to be completely removed, now your airway just comes out of your neck in a stoma. It's called a laryngectomy stoma. Mm-hmm. And now you don't have a voice box, so you can't speak. So a lot of times we can put a hole in between the trachea and the esophagus and put a prosthesis that lets air go through there, and then it just vibrates the esophagus and allows them speech. It's a little different than normal speech, but it's still speech and they can be understood. There is another style of speaking when you have a laryngectomy that just you belch a little bit of air in and then belch it back out and shape it just like you would shape the buzzing of your voice box into speech. And it's called esophageal speech. And so I picked up learning kind of how to do this because it's very difficult. And I just wanted to see if it was possible.
Yeah, it sounds very hard. So you burp to talk.
Kind of.
Oh, gosh. I apologize to all the people who are driving in their cars and just had vomit come up in their throat.
It's not that gross.
So, because sound is vibration, essentially.
Yes.
So as long as you can get your throat to vibrate, you can create some degree of sound that you then shape with your mouth and tongue.
Correct. And that's yet another way that these patients can speak is using what's called an electrolarynx. And that's that robotic voice because it's just a buzzing device that creates a vibration within the throat. They hold it up against the side of their neck and then it vibrates it. Very similar to the very popular I don't know what it's called, Vox, where the instrumentalist or vocalist can play on a keyboard and it makes the sound that they then put a pipe in their mouth and then they shape it into sounds, right? So
yeah.
This is popular in like rap music and like I know, Oh, what's his name?
I'm not sure if I'm showing my age or you're showing yours. I don't know which it is. I think I'm just not.
I think
cool
we need
enough.
To find a clip during a break.
We'll work on getting a clip of a rap artist using a Vox. We do have another caller though, so we actually have John from Dallas. So, John, welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you. I recently had esophageal cancer, and during the surgery, they paralyzed one of my vocal cords. Since then, I've had injections put in for midline correction and an implant, but each time, instead of lasting 2 to 3 months as it should, it only lasts about 3 weeks. Do you have any comments on that?
Oh, I'm so sorry this happened to you. It's really... It breaks our hearts as physicians too when things do go bad during a surgery, and it happens even in the best of hands. And I'm glad that you have been with somebody that does some voice surgery, and it sounds like maybe they haven't had as good a result as you want. There are lots of different things that can be put in the vocal cords to plump them up, and this is similar to the gentleman that called that had presbylaryngitis probably, but in the case of a surgical injury to the nerve, one side is completely paralyzed. And so that side loses all of its tone. It usually moves a little bit away from midline. And so the other vocal cord has to work so hard to come in touch. And so what we try to do is bring the bad vocal cord that doesn't move anymore more towards the midline so that the good cord doesn't have to move as far. And so you can put anything from bits of plastic to strips of Gore-Tex fabric, to your own fat, to mineral paste, to ground up, kind of gross, but ground up dead people's skin. I don't like that particular one just because A, it's really gross, and B, it doesn't really last a long time. My favorite is the mineral paste. It lasts about 3 to 5 years. And my second favorite would be putting in autologous fat because that's your own body's cells and it's permanent.
Well, John, we really appreciate you calling in, and we hope that your continued efforts and the physicians around you get to help you get to a point where your voice lasts longer. So we're hopeful for you.
And we'd be happy to see you in the Voice Center.
Always.
If you want a second opinion, we'd be happy to see you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, John. So,
you know, this is really interesting. There's a lot of people calling in, and I think this shows how badly needed this Voice Center was, because these patients, up until we created the center, they were having to drive 300 or 400 miles to get specialized laryngology care. So I'm so glad to be
that,
here.
I think that a lot of people have voice issues or just questions, maybe not an issue, but like our first caller who said, you know, my voice has been weak my whole life and I don't really know why. So it's something that he's learned to live with. It hasn't affected him overly. You know, he's lived his life. He made it to his 70s, so he's obviously doing just fine. But it's still something that he has questions about and maybe something that he's a little bit dissatisfied with that he wouldn't mind seeing a physician about. So obviously any questions you have about your voice or maybe even our voices. I personally think my voice is sultry, and I try not to have the glottic fry.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
I do think this is a good chance to try another voice diagnosis for the voice doctor in here. This one is actually a twofer. So I've got two voices here, and I need you to identify them both. All right, everyone's going to enjoy this.
La luce che tu
hai.
Josh Groban and Celine Dion.
Oh, so close. So close. I'll give you Celine Dion.
And it's not Josh Groban.
He's the original Josh Groban.
Pavarotti?
Ah, well, I guess he's the second. Not maybe the original. That is Andrea Bocelli.
Oh, Bocelli. Okay.
Bocelli and yes. Celine Dion. Now, rumor is that Celine Dion does not speak outside of performances. I don't know if that's true.
Interesting.
I don't know. We'd have to Snopes that. I'm not sure. I can't back that up. No.
Now we're spreading falsehood.
Celine Dion is not represented by Red River Radio, and we do not speak on her behalf. So I guess that is that sort of an extreme measure that people could take. I mean, you think about teachers; they talk 7 hours a day, 6 hours a day, every day of the week. Is that unreasonable for them to go home and not talk for a few hours to try to preserve their voice, or is that really going to have any noticeable impact?
Well, so a lot of it depends on whether you have underlying vocal problems. So if you have a brewing issue, if you are singing outside of your range that your voice box is designed to be able to handle, then at the end of the day, you may have a very tired voice. If you are one of those people that should have a little bit higher voice, but you're speaking in a lower voice because you want people to respect your, you know, you just don't like the sound of it, and by the end of the day, your throat hurts, then you're abusing your voice. And so certainly then taking a little bit of time and resting it is essential, or you're going to wear it out.
What is the sensation that people get when their voice hurts at the end of the day? What's causing that exactly?
Well, A, it's bad. So that is abnormal.
So your voice should not hurt. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. If you're doing something with your voice and it hurts, there's something wrong. And you need to, if you're a professional voice user, someone needs to look in there and find out what are you doing wrong so you can fix it. Because your voice is the most amazing instrument ever designed. You should be able to use it continuously and effortlessly. So when your voice hurts, a lot of times it's that you're tensing those muscles in your neck, even the ones that don't directly help you make voice, because you're trying to push it and produce a sound that is not coming out naturally.
Well, and now, is there any truth to the hot toddy? The whiskey and tea and lemon and maybe some honey. I mean, is there any truth to that kind of thing?
My grandmother refused to go to sleep without one.
Oh, well, your grandmother
had
knew
to
what
have
was
one.
Up.
But, so, yes and no. So, certainly alcohol and wine and lemon juice and hot tea, they're all astringents. So, they do help to cut through mucus. And, you know, thick mucus sitting on your vocal cords can make it more difficult for them to vibrate and produce a little bit of dysphonia or hoarseness. Now, the problem is all of those also really dry you out. And the biggest enemy to your voice is dehydration. And so we really don't recommend people to use those products or you know, the lemon juice or things like that or alcohol.
Sure.
Because you're going to dry your voice out.
So it's actually the opposite.
And you're going to actually hurt it in the long run. In the short term, yeah. I mean, you can't lie to patients and tell them it's not going to help a little bit and cut through that mucus, because it does. But in the long term, it's just going to hurt. There are other products out there, like Singer Secret is one that I don't even know who produces it, but it's a throat spray and it's got glycerin in it. And it does also cut through mucus, but it simultaneously moistens. So that's a good product to use.
Now, we've actually got a lot of calls here, so let's see if we can get
all
to
right.
A couple of them. I think I've got one here. I think this is Nicholas from Pollock. Nicholas, you're on the air.
Pertaining to voices, of course. I've been singing since I was just a child in church, and the more I've gotten older, I guess several times my voice has changed and stuff like that. But I've always had.
Nicholas, we're losing you a little bit. I'm sure you're on a cell phone. We lost you.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Nicholas. I guess give us a call back if you can find a different line. We're sorry we had to lose your call there. So let's keep going then. We've got Zelma from Manny. Zelma, hello.
Well, hello. Y'all were talking about the head voice a little bit earlier and saying what that was. I'd like him to expound on the chest voice. And I'm a soprano, but sometimes I sing in the chest voice to project harder and get more fuller sound, and I was wondering if that's damaging my vocal cords, and I'll let him expound on that a little bit.
So your chest voice is simply just using your entire vocal cord to vibrate, okay, versus head voice or falsetto, and in males they usually call it falsetto, and in women you call it your head voice.
Uh-huh.
But that's the only difference between the two, and as long as you're supporting that breath with filling your entire lungs, dropping your diaphragm, and supporting that column of air, you're not hurting your voice.
Great.
And the reason why you have more power and projection with chest voice is because, again, you're vibrating that entire vocal cord. And it's interesting. You actually, the overtones that are produced are also very different between those different types of voices.
Mm-hmm.
And you shape the sound differently.
Mm-hmm.
And you use different areas of your pharynx and sinuses to shape that sound. And so that's why they sound a little bit different. They have a different resonance. And trained singers, they even visualize projecting that voice to different places in their body, projecting it to a spot just in front of their lips versus projecting to inside their nose or right in front of their nose. And so that's why they sound different and have a different amount of power and projection. Does that help?
That helps.
Awesome.
Zelma, thank you so much for your call. Now, we actually have another caller for you, Dr. Weinberg.
All right.
So you're just blowing up the phones over here. So we've got Martha from Shreveport. Martha, welcome to Health Matters.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering, do cigars and pipes have the same impact on your voice as cigarettes do?
Interesting question. So all tobacco is really bad. And even we think marijuana smoke the same thing. Because if you really think about this, you are inhaling burning things and bathing your vocal cords in burning smoke. Now, I've never smoked a pipe. My grandfather did. I love the smell of it. I have to admit that. I did.
That's so nice.
I did really love the smell of his pipe tobacco. And in that, I believe you usually will puff smoke just into your mouth and then blow it out. And they don't really inhale it down to their lungs because I think they'd like choke and die if they did that. But you're still getting all of that soot into your upper aerodigestive tract. And more importantly than its effect on your voice box is that you are now exposing all of those surfaces within your throat and your mouth to this tobacco, which can lead to head and neck cancer. And it's such a devastating disease that it just really isn't worth it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Martha, thank you for your call. We really appreciate it. Anyone else that has any questions for Dr. Weinberger? Obviously, we're doing voice swallowing and airway, so we can answer questions about anything. Most of our questions have been about voice at this point. Again, as we discussed, I think everyone's got a voice that they're curious about or doesn't like some element of their own voice, so they've got questions.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
Now, I think it's time for another quiz for the quiz master here. He's doing well. We're going to go...
Do I get a prize?
Yeah, pride. I think your prize is just going to have to be knowing that you've done well. Now, this one I'm pretty excited about, so have a listen. Listeners at home, you can also try to get it.
Look at this lion. He's the king of the jungle. Huge mane out there. He's laying down under a tree in the middle of Africa. He's so big. He's so hot. He doesn't want to move.
I have to admit, you have stumped the chump.
Now, I want you to hear it right there at the beginning. I think we've got a little bit of glottic fry.
Look at this lion. He's the king of the jungle. Huge mane out there.
A little bit there, yes. Yeah. That's good.
All right. Well, that is the one and only Christopher Walken.
Ah, yes.
I know. I didn't want... I could
what
have
is
found
that
it
from?
That is actually from Pool Hall Junkies, okay. 2002. And the whole speech is fantastic. I recommend it if you need a little pump up. Maybe not for children. I think there are some expletives in the speech, but it is a great, inspiring two-minute speech that he gives.
That's awesome.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. So I kind of want to go back to this. We talked about lasers a little bit. So you use lasers? I mean, what are you doing with these lasers?
Lasers?
Yeah, excuse me. Yes, with quotations, lasers. What are we doing with the lasers?
So we use lasers in laryngology for many different purposes. And the interesting thing about lasers is the effect depends on the wavelength of the light that's being used. So there are lights, there are lasers that are green, there are lasers that are yellow, red, and even some that are invisible that are in the infrared region. Hmm. And so the color is so important because if you think about how light works and color works, it's a light is a certain color because it's being reflected or absorbed, right?
Sure. I'll buy that. You're the expert.
Well, I'm definitely not a physicist. But for instance, a green laser is absorbed really well by hemoglobin and not really that
well. What's hemoglobin?
Hemoglobin is the molecule that's in blood that allows you to bind oxygen.
Now, you were making fun of doctors for their big words earlier. You could have said blood.
I fell into it. I'm sorry.
That's all right. All right. So it's absorbed by blood then.
Yes. And so that laser is really cool because it's not doesn't really affect normal tissue very much at all, but it cooks blood vessels from the inside out.
Okay.
And so we can use that in the office on a patient who's awake and sitting there breathing and talking, because it doesn't really hurt that bad. We just use a little bit of topical numbing medicine, but the laser passes through tissue, and then when it hits a blood vessel, it heats up the blood inside. And so we use that for lesions that are very vascular and have kind of started to grow uncontrolled, and they attract all this new blood vessel growth, and we can cook the blood supply and choke off the tumor.
Wow. And do you do this in the office? Does this have to go to the operating room? I mean,
well, it used to, but we do it in the office. And so that's one of the kind of cool things that laryngologists have really pioneered, is a lot of in-office surgery for voice disorders.
That's incredible. Now, we actually have another caller here. We have Pierre from Bossier City, Louisiana. Pierre, you're on the air. Welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you, doctor. I have been hoarse for years, and sometimes it seems like my throat is swelling and my mucus stuck in my throat. So as a matter of fact, I barely can talk right now. I have been to 4 different ear and throat doctors, and every one of it says there's nothing wrong with me. So what's the problem?
Well, I think that you should come to the Voice Center, and I'd love to examine you. And, you know, when we examine a patient like you, one of the first things that we'll do is called video stroboscopy, which is where we use a scope that goes through your nose and then lets us look down at the vocal cords, and we have you talk and sing and speak. And then the light source on the scope, it flashes just barely out of sync with the vibration of your vocal cords. And so, in effect, it allows us to look at the vibration across the entire vocal cord and make sure that there's not a specific area of the vocal cord that isn't vibrating like the rest of it. Sometimes you have vocal cords that don't come together properly or are not moving properly, or different pathologies. So it's multifactorial. But definitely, I can hear some abnormalities in your voice, and so there's something going on. What it is, can't say without looking. But there should be, it's pretty rare to have a voice problem and there's just nothing that can be done to fix it. That does happen, but that's pretty rare.
It's annoying because all that mucus stuck in there, and I have to cough it out, and it's not easy.
Yep. And it could be as simple as you have really bad out of control reflux that is not causing symptoms like heartburn, but is just a little bit of acid that's coming up your swallowing tube and then spilling over and right onto your vocal cords and causing all of these problems. Okay, or it could be something else.
How do I get in touch with you? You get a phone number?
That is a very good question that I really didn't consider beforehand. My secretary may eviscerate me, but
I know.
I guess so. If you
could call the main number at LSUS University Health, and they can obviously put you in touch with anyone and get you any appointments that you need. Another thing you can do, if anyone out there, this is for anybody, Pierre, by the way, thank you so much for your call. Anyone out there, if they are interested in getting in touch with Dr. Weinberger or setting up an appointment at the LSU Center for Voice, Airway, and Swallowing, then all you need to do is have your primary care doctor send a referral over, and we'd love to see you. I know Dr. Weinberger is building his practice here and has just started the center, so we're always excited to have new people over there. So, Pierre, we really appreciate you calling in, and we look forward to being able to help you with that.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
So you mentioned reflux. We have questions about your voice, so we'd like to hear your voice, and that way we can diagnose it over the air. Well, that's not true. We probably won't be able to diagnose it over the air.
The FDA all of a sudden tuned in.
No, we won't be diagnosing it over the air, but we would love to talk to you and answer some questions. So you mentioned reflux a little bit. Now, that's a common problem that a lot of people have. Does that have an impact on your voice?
It absolutely does, and it's this double-edged sword because absolutely the majority of patients that have chronic cough or have mild intermittent hoarseness, reflux is probably the number one contributor to that. And that's a double-edged sword because it's also the most overdiagnosed and overtreated disease in America. So there are a lot of people that are on proton pump inhibitors like omeprazole or Nexium or Protonix that just don't need to be on it. So it's kind of this push-pull situation, but absolutely, that's a pretty common diagnosis that we make.
That's so interesting. It's so funny how all these things are interconnected and you don't realize it, because something as innocuous as having a little phlegm in the back of your throat or having a hoarse voice when you wake up in the morning, you wouldn't expect that has anything to do with it. Now, are there any kind of at-home remedies people could do for reflux? Is there anything you advise in clinic when people show up with this problem?
So we certainly do give them the usual recommendations of avoiding food, real close to bedtime, avoiding tomato products, spicy things like that. These are all recommendations that really came out of the gastroenterology literature and studies, and they are for traditional heartburn,
sure,
or gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD. There have been some pretty good studies done that actually show those lifestyle modification things have no effect on laryngeal,
really,
manifestations of reflux. We still, it's embarrassing to admit, but we still tell our patients to do them because it's kind of this, well, it can't hurt,
sure,
idea. But the studies that have been done to look at, is this really an effective treatment or therapy? No.
So you're saying I can still have my spaghetti marinara before I go
goodness,
to bed?
I knew you were going to do this.
I want to know. I mean, I find
smoke
myself
your
craving.
Your cigar or that's, your pipe?
That's right. My pipe and my marinara sauce call to me right before bed, almost invariably. With that, I think we have another voice here that you're going to have to diagnose. This one I think you're going to get. So here we are listening
Kermit
very
the Frog.
Carefully.
Chewbacca, I love it. Yes.
That's right, Chewie. We have Chewbacca. Now, Chewbacca has probably a lot of things that we could diagnose there. Now, theoretically,
anger management issues.
Han Solo supposedly understands what he's saying there. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I think that was movie magic. So, now that we've had some people call in saying, I have a high-pitched voice, I have a low-pitched voice. Can you explain exactly what causes people to have different pitch in their voice? Why are some people soprano and some people a bass?
So, it's primarily the length of your vocal cords. Think about a guitar. The longer the string, then the lower the pitch.
Sure.
Right? And so if you capo up and you put a little clamp across the neck of the guitar and make the string shorter, it raises the pitch. And so same thing, women and tenors and people with high voices, they have shorter vocal cords.
Okay. So is there anything you can do to change that if you're dissatisfied? I mean, is there
actually is, yes. So there's voice surgeries that you can do to lengthen or shorten your vocal cords and completely alter the pitch.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Do y'all do anything like that at the Voice Center right now?
I haven't done one of those surgeries in a while. I trained, did a number of them in England. Gary Sandu had a pretty busy practice doing that, but haven't had a need to do it here. But it's a fairly easy surgery, actually.
Now you trained partially in England when you were training?
I did. It was fun. That was cool.
Oh man, how long were you there?
I was there almost a year in London.
Was it? I mean, did you pick up the accent? Because the accent is not a product of the larynx. Am I correct?
Correct. Yeah, that's all mental. I didn't, but my son did. It was awesome. So he was, I think, 3 at the time, and so he had picked up Daddy. Where's the rubbish bin? It was awesome.
Oh,
and he kept it for a couple of months after we came
back.
When you
moved back to America,
yes,
people thought you had like abducted a small British boy. Why have you taken that boy? So is there any, you know, we've talked a lot about voice. I know that we've got some swallow questions too, and we've got, you know, we can talk about that a little bit. What are the common problems maybe people don't even realize are a problem? You see a lot with swallowing patients. People come in and they say, oh, this little thing's bothered me. I mean, do you see a lot of swallow patients or do you see mostly voice?
No, it's a good mixture. And I think probably voice is probably the area that people just let it go. And think that this is just how things are. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of people that are hoarse that just, they just tolerate it. Generally, if you're having trouble swallowing, people know that's wrong and there's something odd and not right and they're not going to be okay with it. They're going to be seeking a professional help. Same thing with your airway. If you can't breathe, you're not going to sit there and think, oh, this is just how it is.
Mm-hmm. So now, I guess, what are some more troubling signs that people should maybe be looking for if they're having some swallowing problems? If they've got just a little bit of difficulty swallowing, is that something they should immediately rush out and have something done about? I mean, tell me, what are your thoughts on that? Like when you hear someone who says, oh, every now and then something gets hung up in my throat, you know, the common, oh, it gets caught in my throat all mm-hmm. the time.
So a few things that are a little more concerning is if you've had weight loss and you're not trying to lose weight, that's a little concerning, because that either means that you're altering your diet so much because of the trouble swallowing that you're losing weight, mm-hmm. or that you're physically having trouble getting stuff in to keep up with the demands on your body. Another concerning thing is if you are constantly, or if it's a frequent thing for you that you eat or drink, and then food just gets hung up to the point where you have to stop eating. And then that can be a sign that you've got something called a Schatzky's ring, which is, fortunately, it's just a stricture and can be dilated. It's just a band of scar tissue. And so a lot of what I do is just like being a plumber, going in and snaking out a drain.
Sure. Is that invasive? Is it hard to do? Does it take a lot of time?
It doesn't. It's about a 5-10 minute surgery.
Okay. And can that be done? Do you have to go into the operating room, be put completely to sleep?
It's best to. If there's a patient that's had a laryngectomy and so they've had irradiation, that also deadens some of the nerves. And so they can tolerate this in mm-hmm. the office. But it would be pretty uncomfortable for someone else.
How many times have you had a patient vomit onto you? It has to have hit you.
Once, and it got in my mouth. It was so disgusting. I think I'll go to my grave remembering that.
So now we've heard you belch on the air and know that you got vomit in your mouth. Oh, my gosh. So we also have another caller here. We have Roy from Lake Charles. Roy, welcome to Health Matters. You're on with Dr. Weinberger.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
My question is, my best friend in the world had a throat cancer, and he ended up with a stoma. So he knows how to gurgle talk and all this other stuff. His problem now is he's ready to go back to work, and the company he works for are making him jump through hoops. And the question was on the filter that he actually has on his little stoma that he actually pushes to talk. Do you know what kind of filtration it is, or have you ever heard of companies asking for this type of information to come back to work?
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So it can be multifactorial why they might not want him to come back to work. It could just be that they're really concerned about him. What kind of environment is he in? If it's like a woodworking shop and there's all this wood dust and stuff in the air, then yeah, you probably would want to make sure that you have some kind of filtration. But there are really good devices out there that it sounds like he may have even something that's made by like Atos Medical is one of the primary companies, and they make a device that kind of sticks just inside the stoma, and then a filtration disc fits right on that and filters all the air that comes through it and also moistens it. And with that, you pretty much, the air has been conditioned to an equivalent amount of what you or I have going through our nose and the filtration and warming that happens there.
Okay. I'm going to give him the name of that company and tell him he needs to contact him, and maybe they can give him some more information on it.
Yeah, and I'll bet you that's what he has, because they're the primary company that makes something like that. But if he doesn't, any speech therapist can place one of those.
Well, Roy, we really appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in. We've got another one here. We've got Ernie from Shreveport. Hey, Ernie, you're on Health Matters with Dr. Weinberger.
Thank you.
Oh, Ernie, if you could do us a favor and turn your radio down a little bit, we can hear you.
Hold on just a minute.
So, Ernie, we know you're on here with Dr. Weinberger. What can we do for you today?
Okay, now, I have trouble at times swallowing pills. They'll get caught in the back of my throat, and it's like I'm going to gag with it, and I can wash it all down. So I've gotten in the habit of taking them with food, like vitamins, or just could be anything, like if I'm going to take a ibuprofen or something.
And so you're... What are you wondering?
I'm wondering why it gets stuck. It's kind of like it feels like it's on a sitting in the back of my throat. I can feel it back there, but it's behind the swallow line, behind my tongue.
I absolutely love how patients really do have a amazing understanding of the physiology of what's going on if you just listen, because that's probably exactly what's happening.
Or a plate.
Yeah.
A little area that it sits and it gets caught.
Yep. And there is an area back behind your tongue called the vallecula. And okay. I would bet money that that's exactly what's happening to you. And it could be that you've got a failure of the muscle that sits at the top of your swallowing tube. It's called the cricopharyngeus. And it's kind of this, It's a little valve that normally stays shut, and then when you go to swallow, it's supposed to open up and let that food or liquid bolus come in, or the pill, and then it closes back behind it to keep stuff from coming back out. And that's a fairly common problem, that muscle is just a little bit spastic and won't open up as much as possible. It could, do you have trouble swallowing like solid foods ever?
Typically not. I chew real well, so no.
So you don't really tax yourself. So
correct.
Yeah. So that really could be, and that.
But if I take a large pill or a like a big vitamin or supplement or a smaller one, even sometimes it can just get, and I don't have enough fluid with it.
Yeah, so I think, you know, if you talk to your primary care doctor about maybe getting a modified barium swallow, which is a special type of x-ray study where they basically use some powder that shows up on x-ray really well, and it's not absorbed or affect your body any, and they mix it with water and put it in different consistencies, and they even have pills that are coated with the stuff. And then under an x-ray machine, they have you swallow these different consistencies, and they can watch it as it goes through the back of your throat and the back of the tongue and then into your esophagus, and get a much better understanding of what's happening. Is that cricopharyngeous muscle opening properly? Is your rest of your esophagus swallowing correctly? And that can help a lot. And if it shows abnormalities, have them send you to us. And most of the time, like 95-98% of the time, that's something that we can fix pretty easily.
Okay. Is it something that I need to get fixed? I kind of have the remedy, is that I try to keep, I swallow with liquid.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And the answer to that is it really depends. So, you know, you're not getting any younger. And what if this is something that is going to get a little worse as you get older? Then what if 10 years from now, God forbid, you've had a heart attack, and now all of a sudden, you know, taking you to the operating room is a much bigger deal and much riskier.
Oh, okay.
Don't have a crystal ball, and I hope that's not what happens. But,
correct.
You know, sometimes it can be better to intervene when something is just a minor nuisance and you're younger and healthier. On the other hand, you know, nothing in medicine is without risks or the potential for complications. So if it's really not bothering you and it's not something that's going to get worse, then no, the doctor would only be treating themselves to try and fix it. But I would say that definitely what's going on with you is really not normal. And I would at least figure out what is going on.
Okay.
And is it likely to get worse?
To ask for is what?
It's called a modified barium swallow, and any physician, family medicine, internal medicine, can order that.
Modified barium swallow.
Yes, sir.
Ernie, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate you being on with Dr. Weinberger.
You're listening to a repeat broadcast of Health Matters. No phone calls will be taken tonight.
So modified barium swallow, that's another thing that I guess you do at the Center for Voice Swallow.
Well, so actually, no. So we do it in the center,
okay.
But that's done by a speech language pathologist,
okay.
And a radiologist.
Okay.
And so I rely heavily on having good teammates that do those, but they're the ones that actually do that study.
Sure. So I guess the center is not just you. It's a team, and it has...
That's a great point, yeah. A person can't just march into town with a suitcase and flop it down and say, ta-da, here's the voice center. A voice center, to really be a true voice center, you have to have a great radiologist that's familiar with doing modified barium swallows and interpreting them and knowing what is going on just by looking at these pretty complex exams, mm-hmm. and a really good speech therapy team who's used to dealing with dysphagia and with voice disorders as well. It takes gastroenterologists, which are specialists in swallowing and the gastrointestinal system, so the esophagus and the stomach and the rest of the bowels, pulmonologists who are lung doctors, and more specifically interventional pulmonologists who deal with invasive ways to treat airway disorders. So I work very closely with Dr. Holliday and Dr. Calangeri, who are interventional pulmonologists there. I'm sure I'm forgetting other people. So it takes this whole huge team of people, anesthesiologists that are interested and willing to take on risky airway surgeries. So these are not surgeries that are easy for the anesthesiologist, and that's why these voice centers are only found in larger academic health centers, because you're just unlikely to find an anesthesiologist who's comfortable with those. And we have that at LSU also.
So I guess, I mean, this is a gem almost in the crown that is University Health LSU Shreveport. This is a big deal. It's kind of a coming together of a lot of different departments in an effort to help people in Shreveport in a way that I guess wasn't really available to them before. I know this has been this has been an exciting hour. I've enjoyed talking to you. I've enjoyed all of our callers. I do have another clip for you, because okay. I don't want us to go. Sorry. Can you identify this?
Yes, and you know, I come from a neighborhood where "the" is a very common middle name.
Really?
You know, there's Jimmy the Weasel and Sal the Snake, you know?
Oh, I see.
You should understand that being Italian, right?
All right.
I should know this.
You should. I'm going to give it to you one more time.
Oh. Yes, and you know, I come from a neighborhood where "the" is a very common middle name.
Really?
You know,
I see.
There's Jimmy the Weasel and Sal the Snake, you know?
Oh, I see.
Understand that being Italian, right? Oh.
You're right. Going to have to help me out on that one, too.
You've guessed it like 8 times tonight. I've played it for you. I was trying to throw you a bone. That is Kermit the Frog.
That really is Kermit the Frog?
Kermit the Frog, yes. He was being interviewed
by
Jay Leno. That was when Kermit was on Leno.
All right. That's awesome.
All right, we're going to get one last one. It's a classic. I think you'll get it. Give me one last one.
Your bank account is overdrawn. Now, what is the reason?
You don't give me enough money?
I don't give you enough money.
Well, we both agree that must be the reason.
And right. Lucy, I'm home.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so that was Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball. And I want you to know, finding this clip just made my day, because I had to listen to a lot of old Ball, and it was fantastic. Dr. Weinberger, I just really want to thank you for being on. This has been a great pleasure. I know that I count you as a friend and mentor, and I'm glad to say that you're at our university, and this has been a great thing to develop this voice center. So really, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. I'm glad I'm here.
So, for everyone, this has been Health Matters. This is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. The views and opinions expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily reflect those of Red River Radio, its staff, or LSUS. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producers is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided this evening by Wally Derleth, Henry Edwards, and Tim Snell. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also from the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Again, I'm Dr. Patrick Glavo, and thank you for joining us this evening.